Whether you keep them in your home or love to see them in theirs, these are the creatures that bring us all together.
Reptiles. We're going to be delving into the experiences of reptile lovers from around the block and around the world. This is the Reptile Talk Podcast.
Boom. What is going on, everybody? This is Jeremy Turgeon from Brassman Reptiles.
And I'm Rob, and I'm creeping it real.
Hey, and Rob is sitting in a room that is 87.4 degrees, so he is melting slowly.
It is pretty toasty in here. I turned the fan off because I was worried about it on the mic, but you know what? I don't care anymore.
Yeah, no, turn on your fan, bro. It's okay. It'll be okay. When I go and edit the audio in post, I can get rid of that frequency. It's okay.
I don't sweat. You know, you saw me a nerd. I don't sweat very often. I'm sweating a little bit right now.
It's true. Yeah. No, I give you props because I also know that it's hot, but it's also humid. So
yes. It is so humid in here right now.
Yeah, because I think we're two of the same folks when it comes to, like, we can tolerate heat pretty well, but when you throw that high level of humidity, that's when, like, ugh.
I'm usually good with it, but, like, without any air movement, it was just sitting on my skin, and I'm like, oh, man.
Right, right. Yeah, James said it best. No wonder why your Wi-Fi is dropping. Your system is like, why?
That probably is why. You know what? I'm going to go open up a window real quick. Hold on.
Go, do it. Do it. Good Lord. Well, what is up, everybody? This is, if you're watching on YouTube, round two of a doubleheader evening tonight. And we had a great chat with Matt from Reptile Revolt. And you can go check out that episode. That's episode 130. And if you're on YouTube, you're getting this all at once. If you're an audio only listener, you're getting these consecutively as they come out. Look, Rob is already cooler. Now that there's an open window and a fan circulating,
it's the shorts.
Air. It's just the shorts.
The shorts are why I'm cooler. They got toucans on them.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. How many pairs of bird related shorts does Rob own? That's going to be
I decided last summer that I'm going to be the weird shorts guy now. And Kristen's friend Meredith has been like, oh, I'm facilitating this. And so she's been periodically getting me lots of weird, funky shorts. And so I've got like tiger shorts now. I got dinosaur shorts. I got toucan shorts. I got alligator shorts. I got all sorts of weird, funky shorts. So it's my thing now.
I'm not mad at it.
You witnessed an evolution.
It's true. It's true. I'm here for it. I'm here to see how it continues to develop and evolve.
The alligator shorts I got have a 5-inch inseam, so they're Hoochie Daddy shorts, too.
I was going to say, we get into Hoochie Daddy territory.
It's going down. Daytona, be ready, baby.
It's going to be... There's going to be a highlight on your Instagram, a highlight reel.
It's called Hoochie Daddy Shorts.
Hoochie Daddy Shorts. That's it, yep. Dude. That's it. And it's always only going to be from Daytona or any Florida trip ever.
Oh, no. They're going everywhere. When I did the Arizona trip, they're coming.
Oh, man.
Yeah. This is my personality now.
I'm again, not mad at it. Just trying to imagine... trying to take Rob seriously while he's super energetic and hype about finding Melosis or anything like that. But then there's just the shorts.
Showing, baby. With the
and it's like the most ridiculous print on the shorts. It's like, we got to get you some Rocco's Modern Life shorts. Or some Doug shorts, like any of those.
What I really am going to do, I don't know if I should say it on air, but you remember the swimsuit that I brought to Daytona?
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah.
Ha!
Oh, I don't know about that.
Oh, it's going down.
Well, moving along, this episode is brought to you by Blackbox Cages.
You're looking for a rack or a new enclosure? Make sure you check out Blackbox Cages. I just got my stacking in my racks over here, and I'm really loving them so far. I will be posting some videos going down the things that I love about them here in the next couple weeks or so. You can see I haven't finished. Don't look. I haven't finished setting them up yet. I got light panels and all that jazz, but I haven't dressed them up. Or these two out of three of these are actually empty right now. I haven't even moved the snakes into them yet. But Janet is just at her prelay shed, and so I've got a security camera taped to her enclosure so that I can watch for the next month of what's going on with her. So I didn't want to move her into the enclosure until after she lays, because this is a very sensitive time for her. But the Fleb will be moving in there, and then I already moved Ursula into her enclosure, so I'm loving them so far. Dude.
Heck yeah. So make sure you go check them out, blackboxcages.com, and go get yourself a new rack or cage, because we all need more racks and cages for things, right?
Yes.
Bam. Yes. Well, without further ado, let's get our guest Christian Elmer in the house. Bam. What's going on, dude?
What's up, guys?
Not much.
Doing pretty good. Doing pretty good. It's a little toasty, but yeah, I'm doing good. What's the temperature like out by where you're at?
That's nice today. It's like low 60s.
Oh, so,
yeah.
About it was 91 today.
I like it up here in the Northwest.
See, yeah, if it's below 75, I need like a jacket and a hoodie, because I freeze to death. So like I like it when it's like between 80 and 87. Once it gets to like 88, then I'm like, okay, it's getting a little warm now.
Yeah, low 60s, that's perfect operating temperature. I take that.
No.
I'm with you, Christian. Like I'm cool with like 60s, even you could breach into 70, 71, 72. I'm okay. I'm good. That's perfect.
Yeah, exactly.
No. Dude, when I lived in Maine, I had a thermostat for my room that was for the baseboard. I had it set to 82 every day.
That's ridiculous.
Rob is the human version of when you start to talk to monitor keepers and they tell you that their basking spots are like 120 to 130. Right? That is Rob in human form.
I get all warmed up. I go run around and do things, and then I like chill out for a minute.
Yeah.
Then I go back and go do some more forage stuff. Go get some tacos, get some quesadillas, keep moving around, go herping.
Oh, gosh.
So, Christian,
documentary,
thank you so much for coming on, man. I appreciate it. I wanted to get a chance to talk to you. You work with some of the stuff that I love as well, and I figured we could chat about some of that stuff. I'd love to hear your thoughts on some of the Borneo stuff. And then you successfully bred some scrub pythons, and I'd love to talk to you about that, because the world needs more scrub pythons. So
yeah, absolutely. I know our sort of paths have aligned in a lot of ways over the years. And
yes. Have
a lot of the same forums and things of that nature. So
yeah. Yeah, I probably have known you now for, I don't know, 10 years or so.
Like, yeah, online. At least only. Been aware, yeah.
Yeah. Heck, that's pretty wild to think about.
Yeah.
Time flies.
I know. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. I get too focused in on things, and then I look up and I'm like, oh, I've been in North Carolina for almost 3 years now. What is going on? That's basically what happened.
Oh, man.
So for people who might not have heard of you or the things that you work with, what are some of the things that you work with, and then what kind of brought you to where you're at right now?
Probably the thing that most people know me from is the Borneo Short Tails. I've been doing that for the longest and most consistently, and then some Red Bloods along with that. And then I've had scrubs on and off, and then, as you said, just last year had some success with that. But I've also done a lot of Amazon tree boas over the years. I don't have any currently. trying to think what else. Those are kind of my big things over the years consistently. Besides, like, I always have a handful of corn snakes and things like that, just, you know, just for fun. I like having something at the shows that I can sell to a first-time snake owner, and most of the stuff I have doesn't fall in that category, so I like to have a little variety.
Heck yeah, man.
Yeah. I find that it's so much easier to sell a corn snake than it is to sell a blood or a scrub. It's like, I know that if I put a corn snake with anyone, they can do well with it, and I don't really have to worry about it.
No, you got to be a little pickier with everything else. And I've done some shows where I've only had, you know, Borneos at the time to sell or something, which is great, and they're fun to show off. But even the people that are interested, you've got to kind of vet them and make sure they sort of understand what they're going to end up with. If I got a handful of corn snakes, I'll talk you into that. You know, I can sell that to a 10-year-old and their family and feel real good about it and know they're going to have success the first time. So,
yeah,
for sure.
True. So as far as the, like, I don't know what we should talk about first. I kind of want to talk about the scrubs first.
Yeah,
so,
sure.
Yeah, how long have you had the pair that you got those babies from?
So I got this pair of Southerns from David Means in 2018. I think they were imports from Dan Maleri originally that he had, and then he was selling a bunch, so I got a pair from him. Previous to that, I had raised up another pair that I had and then lost the female. She was full of eggs, so that would have potentially been my first clutch in 2018, and then that went down. So I sort of started over and raised this one up. And yeah, so they're both, what did I say, 6 years old now, 5 or 6 years old.
Hell yeah. And how long roughly is she?
She's probably, you know, a slim 9 foot would be my best estimate. I don't get her out very much. She's not the friendliest. He's a lot better, so I hope to get him out now that the weather's turning and get some outside pictures and stuff. But
hell yeah.
I keep him pretty trim.
Yeah, my girl that laid the baby or had the babies last year, Fleb, she's probably like that 8.5 foot.
Yeah.
I don't really think she might be 9 foot. But she's not very big, you know, she's smaller around than an Arizona can, smaller around than your average soda can. So like not a very big snake.
I'd say my girl's about the Arizona can size being gravid at the moment. She'll be thinner when she has her eggs here in a few days, hopefully.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. Man.
And how long after your prelay, are you counting how long after the prelay she was laying?
She shed on the 4th of April, and I don't remember exactly how many days it was last year, but I do remember figuring out that she's due next Wednesday if she goes the same number of days, whatever that works out to be, 30-something days.
So, yeah.
Which unfortunately I'll be out of town for, so I gotta...
Isn't that how it goes?
Yeah.
So what'd you say you're going out for?
What's that?
What'd you say you're going out of town for?
Oh, I'm going fishing, doing some herping on the east side of the state here. It's a totally different environment than we have up here in Western Washington. So get to see some rattlesnakes, hopefully, if the weather cooperates, and gopher snakes and things of that nature. Plus, just break the kayak out and do some trout fishing. So,
hell yeah.
Heck yeah, dude.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like a fun getaway.
Yeah, it's kind of my yearly thing just to get out and, you know, get to do a little something, not have to have any timelines or anything. If I feel like going for a hike, I can go for a hike. If I want to crash for a couple hours, I can crash for a couple hours. But yeah, there's always a lot of cool stuff in, you know, in a pretty small area. A lot of, like I said, a lot of lakes, a lot of places to hike, you know, just random spots to check out. So it's always a lot of fun.
Heck yeah, man.
Yeah. I'm envious of anyone who can find rattlesnakes right in their area because where I'm at, I can't.
To be fair, it's like a 4-hour drive for me to get to the other side. So, yeah.
If I did that drive, I could find rattlesnakes too. But have I done it yet? No. Basically, it's at. So, how many babies did you end up with last year?
If I remember correctly, I had 17 eggs, but I had some issues during incubation, which I'm actually happy I hatched any at all. So I think I ended up hatching 8, and then I think one of them passed pretty quickly, wasn't doing very well. So I ended up with 7 healthy babies, which I was still thrilled with given my history. So happy to have those. And then I think I sort of figured out, I think I was just keeping everything too moist, which generally worked for everything else that I'd had. So I sort of wasn't prepared, I guess, that the scrubs were going to be a little more sensitive on the incubation side. So I'm just going to switch up a couple things this year and hopefully no issues on that end.
Yeah, that's one of the things I've noticed, that scrubs are super, super sensitive to humidity and moisture, and a little bit in the eggs, but even more so like after they hatch, they're just so, so sensitive. But like for that first like week or two, you can kind of get away with it sometimes, but after that, they are just like super, super. They need to have a lot of air ventilation and airflow for them to do well. And like you're saying, being able to hatch any is a huge success, because I was thinking that I've listened back on a bunch of podcasts where they're talking about, you know, certain people who are trying to get things like, I think it was the albino berms. The first two times they tried to breed them, they killed all the eggs. Like, can you imagine spending that much money and like, you know? And it's all a learning process. Yeah, for real, bro. And it's all a learning process. And there are lots of people who try and try and try and don't even get to the portion where you get the eggs. And then if they do get the eggs, then all the eggs go bad. Or, you know, there's all these different hurdles to get through before you actually get babies in your hand. And then establishing babies after that is its own other thing altogether.
Yeah, no, for sure. And thankfully, once I had the babies, they actually all started up pretty good for me. I didn't really have any issues. You know, I was already prepared to offer some, you know, some quail and some different mixes. So none of them took more than a couple months to get feeding pretty consistently. So little hot water and some frozen thawed rodents goes a long way for those guys.
Yep. I got one holdout still from last year who will only take assist-fed rodents. It will not take off tongs, and it's really annoying.
Yeah, this year we'll hopefully have a larger sample size, so we'll see how they do. But you know, they're pretty hardy. I'm not anticipating too many problems. I'm sure if I had live to offer, it'd be even easier. But I pretty much strictly do frozen thawed unless I absolutely have to, just because it's a hassle for me to track some down. So I do everything I can to avoid that.
Yeah. My nearest place, I go to these guys, Morph Mayhem, and they're probably 25 minutes from me. So whenever I got to get live, I got to go and, you know, 25 minutes out, hang out, talk, pull rodents, and then another 25 minutes back. So it's like, you know, after work eats up a good portion of your night before you got to go to bed and get ready for the next day, you know?
What's all around you, almost everywhere you look, and makes your life better? Birds. Learn all about these beautiful creatures in this wonderful new podcast called Birds of a Feather Talk Together. Two experts guide two newbies on their journey to learn more. Mallard ducks, ivory-billed woodpeckers, Hawaiian honeycreepers, blue jays, cardinals, sandhill cranes, and more. Each week we discuss a different bird and walk away with a better understanding of the birds all around us. Oh, and we have a ton of fun doing it. Listen now. You're going to like learning about these birds. I guarantee it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I am my closest, like, solid rodent guy for, like, the quantity of stuff that I need is, like, an hour from me. So I feel that pain. Man, just take the frozen thaw, dude. Just take
exactly. I just stock up the chest freezer and just make sure I'm ready ahead of time, and then I'll just run to the, you know, there's a pet store too kind of on my way home from work that I can stop at if I absolutely need to pick up something. But yeah, apart from that, and you know, it would be easier to start a lot of the babies, you know, especially short tails and stuff, probably be easier if I had, you know, live ready to go. And I've thought about just breeding them just during, you know, hatching season and stuff, but I really don't want to add one more thing
you gotta do. Checklist. Yeah.
I gotta take care of. So.
I do not blame you at all.
Nope, at all, dude.
And are you planning on breeding any short tails this year?
Yeah, I did. I've been kind of taking a break from it because I'd bred a lot over the past several years. But I did have a clutch. I don't remember the date, but last month sometime I got a clutch, and that was the only one I was going for. But these are both animals that I had raised up, and so the babies will be third generation stuff that's hatched now here. So just like VPI Stripe, you know, Head Ultra kind of thing. So, but should be some fun ones out of that. So I'm excited. It's been a couple of years since I've had Borneo babies. So, and it was a, you know, a smaller female, so it's not 35 babies I had to worry about. I think it was 15 or 16 eggs. So, you know, nice manageable number. I was trying to sort of take it easy this year. So I just did that and then tried the scrubs one more time, and it looks like she went, so that'll be great. And I can just sort of focus on that and not have a ton to worry about.
Yeah, that's basically what I did last year, where I was like, I didn't want to have short tails and scrubs and corn and this and that and this and that. So I just bred the scrubs and corn snakes, and I didn't breed any other pythons last year. So I would have time, because I'm like, corn snakes, those are easy to get started. It's no big deal. And then I want to just focus on those scrubs and then be able to put some time into, you know, really figuring out what I'm doing with them. And it worked out. I mean, those babies are really freaking cool.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to going through the process again and, you know, seeing the babies hatch and everything. And then, you know, she'll have gone 2 years in a row. So next year I'll give her the year off and see where we go from there. But.
Oh, so you did. She did back to back years. That's awesome.
Yeah, she did back to back. She bounced back real quick last year, ate immediately after I took the eggs from her. Looks in real good shape. So I figured, why not give it a shot? And she'll do what she does. And yeah, she looks great. Looks like she's packed full eggs. So super dark, doing the usual.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
That's when you know, because like when maybe a month ago, I was looking at Janet and like, the males are going crazy, and I was like, okay, I'll throw them together. And then she went through a shed cycle and she looked normal. And I was like, oh man, maybe I fucked it up. Maybe I missed it. And then like a couple weeks ago, I was like, oh, she looks like a little bit darker right now. And then she went into a shed cycle and now she's black. And I'm like, oh, okay, never mind. I was a little early. And I look back at like my notes from 2 years ago and I'm like, she is still a little early, but this is like basically the same amount of time that she did last time.
No, it's once you have it in front of you, it's so obvious, though, you know, sort of what they're going through. Once you actually see it, there's no guesswork.
Yeah. It's not like with any of the other snakes, because like there's hardly any other snakes that do that when they're going through their reproductive cycle. Like ball pythons, I guess you could say that they like glow. They like lighten up a little bit sometimes. Right. Not all of them do it.
Not nearly as obvious as I've seen in the scrubs. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and I thought I heard that Bolins do that too. I could be wrong, though. There's such a small sample size with those anyway that, like, who knows?
Yeah. revisit that topic in 10 years, and we'll see. Hopefully there will be a better sample size.
Hopefully. Maybe? Who knows?
There'll be at least one more, please God, at least one more captive U.S. clutch in the next decade.
There has to be. There just has to be.
That's what I'm saying. Please God.
There's other people I know who have got stuff that they're raising and they just don't talk about them. And they're very competent Python breeders. So I'm sure that in the next 10 years, they'll produce them, I guess. You know.
Yeah. We can hope. Let's hope and pray.
Yeah, I know there's some good folks out there that are working on it. I'm just glad that my favorite scrubs are also the cheapest and easiest to deal with. I don't have to worry about saving up, you know, $5,000-$10,000 to get into something.
To get Southern, a Malukan? Yeah.
Yeah. Southerns are genuinely have been my favorite, you know, for decades. So.
Really? What draws you to them?
Probably number one, as far as head shape and the scalation and stuff goes, I think they just sort of have it. There's something, you know, Jurassic Park raptor-like about them. You could say that about a lot of the scrubs, but there's just something that jumps out about looking a Southern in the eye. And then I'm always a fan of the, you know, the earth tones. Same reason I like the Borneos a lot. The honey, the yellow, the
oranges,
the warm kind of colors. And I don't know. That's pretty much it. It's nothing against anything else, but they do it for me. And you know, closest thing you're gonna get to the mainland Kinghorn Eye.
I was just gonna say they look just like Kinghorn Eye. Yeah.
Yeah. So that helps.
That's my thing. Like, I get a lot of people who message me and they're like, "Hey, I really want to get Kinghorn Eye. I really want to get Kinghorn Eye." I'm like, "Get a Southern. They look the same. And if you just feed it and grow it, it'll be big." And there's like, I don't think, like, I don't know. For me, I've worked with a lot of really big snakes, big retics. And I'm like, thinking about working a scrub that is that large sounds horrible. It sounds like the worst thing that you could possibly do. It doesn't sound enjoyable. It sounds like every moment you just be worried that, like, this could be my last moment because, like, they've got such a strike range on them.
I mean, I've heard some stories from a long, long time ago about some puppy dog tame Kinghorn Eye that are no longer around. But I do know that if I ever got that chance, I would clear out my snake room and just make it a walk-in, you know, walk-in vivarium for a couple of them, and I'd be happy for the rest of my life with that. But
yeah, yeah, hey. I have a pair of Southerns, and my male is that like light honey color where he's just like super, super light. The pattern is very similar color, and I really like that about him. And then the female is a little bit more more contrasted in her pattern, not like dark, but she's just a little bit more contrasted than he is.
Yeah. Both of mine turned out to be fairly, heavily patterned as adults, which I don't mind. I like the extremes. I don't mind a good mix in there. So, you know, some of the babies especially, you know, still have that red coloration, but you can really see that pattern coming through. And that's a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah.
See that coming in.
Yeah. Seeing them go through their first couple sheds and being able to see the pattern really, because when they're born, like even with the Barnacks, you can barely see their pattern at all.
Yeah.
And then after their first couple sheds, then you really start to see what's going to come out from underneath it. But like, yeah, with the Southerns, I bet you it's right around the same, you know.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun to watch.
Heck yeah.
And you're doing what size enclosure do you have your adults in?
They're in 6x2x2s right now. Mm-hmm. So they can stretch out pretty good, and that seems perfectly adequate for where they're at. You know, maybe 5 years down the road when they're both put a little more size on, I might look at doing something a little more extensive. I've got kind of plans in my head for like a stack of big like corner enclosures or something along those lines, but I'm not sure what I want to do yet as far as that goes. But
cool.
The 6x2, I, you know, and then I have a nice shelf going across the whole backside, and I might mix that up a little bit, but it works pretty well, and they both seem to utilize all the space pretty well, so I like that.
Yeah, I find that with mine, I have branches in most of them, and like almost all of them use the branches, but they like pick times because like Fleb has been on her branch for the last 2 weeks. And then the week before that, she was using her hide, and then she'll use her water dish a little bit. But like certain times of the month, she's more inclined to be on the perch, like perched up, and she perches just like a chondro, just like back and forth, you know, perfectly on there. And it's something really cool about seeing a big scrub curled up like that on a branch. I don't know.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. I'm thinking I might, after she has her eggs, I might switch out. I've sort of built some perches that I want to get in there and sort of experiment with. I like the shelves cause it's easy, you know, and it gives them a lot of extra floor space if they want to be up or down. And I can even put hide boxes up there and stuff. But from a display perspective, you know, I do miss having the little more naturalistic, and it might be worth the pain of getting them out to mix it up a little bit.
Yeah. I haven't used shelves in any of my enclosures. I feel like they would use them. I just I've not done that yet.
Yeah. I mean, obviously it's a lot easier when you're trying to get them out of there if they don't have anything they can wrap around.
Wrap onto.
That's probably that plus the extra floor space it gives is probably the primary benefit to it. But yeah, I don't know. I like trying different things, giving them different options and see what they use and what they don't.
Hell yeah. Yeah. I think that Janet, she does not use perches like at all. But I think that's because when I was raising her, I raised her in racks and I didn't give her a lot of branch. I gave her like cork bark for her to sit on, but it was like flat stuff. And so when I'm holding her, she doesn't wrap like a regular scrub does. She like sits all wonky and everything. I think that's because I didn't give her that much space, and the space I was in, I didn't really have the space to do that. And so she's a little bit different, but all the rest of the scrubs that I've got, they all use branches. And so all my babies I've been using branches with too, to make sure that they are able to do that and utilize all those muscles, you know?
Yeah, there's nothing better. The very first scrub I ever had back, you know, 20 years ago was a Southern that I raised up from Yasser Mustafa. It was a gift for him, and I raised him up, and that's when I still lived at home, so I had the cage in my bedroom and everything growing up. But, you know, had that all decked out with the branches and everything. There was nothing better than seeing him, you know, eight and a half foot curled up on display under the lights and everything. And he was as friendly as they come as far as scrubs or pretty much any snake goes. So could even take him out and with the kids and everything. So he was a great snake, and yeah, loved watching
him.
That's
awesome. That's so cool, man. And so what direction, I know I've been bouncing back and forth a little bit with the Borneos and everything, but the Borneos, what's the vision? What's the direction you're heading in with the project? Because you're working on, I think you said, third generation from your side.
Yeah. I wish I had a better answer to this question. My thing has always been I pick what I like and then raise them up, and I'm happy to sort of just produce babies from those animals that I can get to other people for reasonable prices that I know are healthy, you know, sort of producing that pet level animal. And I'm not great at sort of the long-term planning, other than I just sort of decide, hey, I like this one. This one's going to stick around here for a while. But ultimately, I mean, when it comes down to it, you know, I have some pretty reduced pattern stripes and some nice, like I said, ultra head ultra. There's also a little bit of the fade line from Keith Brady mixed in too. So curious to see what comes out, but it'll all be, you know, super stripe type things. I have produced a lot of redhead stuff over the years that I've sold a lot of babies from, and sort of the founding stock males were very redheaded. So I kind of wish I kept more of those if I were to go back in time and pick a direction. We'll see what comes out of this one. Like, there's still a fair amount of orange head left in what I have. So,
yeah, I think that it's, I guess, like, I'm thinking about the question now and I'm like, oh yeah, like I can say this is kind of the direction that I want to go in with Borneos, but then they're also so polygenic that, like, even if you're saying I'm going for this, you still end up with so many other
different. Yeah, I mean, that's ultimately, that's ultimately one of the main reasons. I mean, rephrase. There's a ton of reasons I like Borneos, but one of the things that I love is the variability. And if I can get that out of any animal, that's also the reason I like Amazon tree boas. I like producing a mix. And with that, then I can just sort of be happy to have what I have and produce that mix. And, you know, there's a little bit of everything for everybody in there, and then I can sort of pick through and keep what I like out of it. So I'm very much about that, and any animal that can have that sort of variability in there, I'm a fan of. But it does make it a little more difficult sometimes to sort of pick a direction that you want to go.
Yeah, it makes harder on the hold back sometimes. I mean, I've been looking at everything. I'm like, I need to hold this back and this back and that back.
I feel like there's an annual, at this point, because we've been doing the podcast for so long, there is an annual thought of how many holdbacks will be in Rob's rack this year. Because the number is never the same as what he says it's going to be.
Yeah, dude, those baby scrubs from last year, I've got like three of them that I'm like, okay, these ones I can definitely sell. And then I have another couple of them that I'm like, maybe I shouldn't sell these because they're so heavily, they're like, it doesn't make sense because both the parents are very like reduced pattern, but there's a couple babies in there that have got like an exorbitant amount of pattern all the way down their whole body. And I'm like, oh man, maybe I shouldn't sell these freaking things. I was planning on just moving all of them out, but like, after the first couple sheds, I'm like, oh, maybe I should.
It's tough. I've got 2.2 left for my last year's Southern clutch, and I kind of got to decide what I'm going to do at this point with those. I don't know. At least keep a pair just for, you know, safety and memorial sake in the over the next couple of years. But it's challenging, especially with something that's so sort of near and dear to your heart as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So I want to jump over to the corn snake thing just momentarily. Is there like, just, I'm a corn snake geek, but like, is there a specific morph or combo that's just really caught your attention as you've worked with them? Or is it just another also kind of like, I like the mix because you really never know what the hell is going to come out.
I mean, that's definitely part of it. Something I've always sort of, and I'm not super up to date on some of the more newer corn snake morphs, but something I've always sort of gone back to is like the ghost stripe sort of look, or lavender stripe, or like I have a sun-kissed sun-kissed ghost stripe right now that I'm raising up that sort of popped up out of nowhere out of clutch last year. So anything sort of that is, for whatever reason, has always sort of drawn me to it. So anything I can do that where I can guarantee myself, you know, something along those lines, or the parents, something along those lines. And then whatever else comes out of it, again, it just makes the table look nicer when you go to a reptile show and you got a little bit of everything, you know, you
can absolutely
show off and have people pick through. So that's sort of why I do that. And then, and I want to get more into the locality stuff too, which Yasser is doing a ton of, and I've already got a pair of Scotland County corns from, is it Josh Easter? I got to double check. But I know Yaster's also got a bunch of stuff cooking that'll be coming. So I'll probably be picking up some more, a few different things from him as well. You know, it's good old fashioned wild type corn snakes.
Heck yeah. I love seeing folks get really into the locality aspects of some of these U.S. native birds, because for the most part, for the longest time, it was just like, now we're just making these cool things and whatever. And that's what we're focused on. But it's like, no, some of these localities have some really interesting looks to them, and like, let's explore that and actually kind of dive into it a little bit. I think Cow King is very similarly to that. Like, we see a lot of the locality specific stuff really becoming more available and more spoken about, which is really cool.
Yeah, I think that's really cool. And at least when it comes to the colubrids and stuff, I've sort of decided that unless I can get something that's at least locality centric or you know, I'm going to sort of hold out for those sort of things. Just, you know, there's just sort of a neat thing about knowing the history and having that connection to a specific time and place. And then, you know, all the rainbow clutches of corn snakes, that can be sort of a separate thing. I really want to pick up just a nice pair of like locality black rat snakes is a big one on my list. And hopefully I'll be able to make that happen this year, and just other stuff like that. So sort of started, Ryan Young had collected some Brewster County Emery rat snakes several years ago, and sort of gifted those to me as babies. And so I thought that was really cool, knowing like the precise location that those babies had been picked up from. So that sort of like got me a little bit tilted towards that direction, and less into, you know, the morphs and things like that. So,
yeah. Heck yeah, man. I dig it. I definitely dig it. That being said, I'm also a sucker for the ghost stripe kind of look and stuff. Like, that's just kind of like it, one of those first few combos where you started to really deviate from the typical corn snake pattern, where you've got that annery look, which is already really striking, but you just add those stripes down the back and you're like, that's just kind of a cool snake, man.
No, and it's cool. And it's almost cooler when you hatch a clutch that has the stripes and the normal patterning in there, and you can see that contrast, you know, next to each other. It's, I don't know. There's just some fun about that.
Absolutely.
Like I said, I'm a variety guy, so anything I can do to get a little mix is all good with me.
Yep. I'm with you on that for sure.
There's so many unknown hats is all I got to say.
So many.
I don't know if we talked about this on the podcast, but one of the guys I met in college who, like, we were in some biology class, and he found out that I kept snakes. And I was like, oh, he's like, oh, I got a snake. And so we, like, chatted it up, and he had an Annery corn snake that he got when he was like a kid, and it was a female, and it was like an adult sized corn snake. And I was like, why don't you try and breed it, man? Like, you got an adult sized female corn snake. You gotta just take the eggs and just put them on a shelf in your room and they'll hatch. Yeah. Like, so he literally just picked up a male, I think it was a male normal corn snake, and was just like, hey, he got it for free. And he just threw them together, got a clutch. And I was like, it's probably just going to be a whole lot of nothing in that clutch, man. Just so you know, it's probably not going to be super exciting. Dude, he got Annery's, snow, like tri-stripe stuff. He got albinos. There was a little bit of everything in that clutch.
Yep. Yep, sounds like, about right.
Snows. I don't understand.
No, it's funny because I actually, 3 or 4 years ago, I hatched some like random hypo motley snow things that I wasn't expecting at all was in any of the parents. So I kept those back, and actually I could have bred those this year, but I decided to, like I said, taking it easy. So I'll breed them next year. But it's yeah, it's just fun. It's just fun.
It is.
It's just it so definitely weird because he had that corn snake since he was a kid. Like, so it yeah. had those heads. Back then.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Right. Don't worry, Rob. In the next like 10 or 15 years, it'll be happening with ball pythons too.
I thought you were going to say scrubs, and I was like, don't you dare say that.
No. Not with scrubs. No, but with the amount of breeders that I hear talk about just letting like pastel head double heads or shit. Whatever. Yeah. Yeah, just like all that stuff just kind of float away. It's like, nah, at some point, we're going to see some 8-year-old that's just like, I made a pastel clown pied. Like,
yeah, yeah, at a certain point, it doesn't become worth their time to even, you know, list it as anything.
Exactly. Yeah.
There's a lot of those.
Yeah.
But now with the shed testing and stuff, I mean, theoretically, you could test things.
Yeah, this is very true. This is very true. But yeah, no, that'll be interesting to see one day. I mean, I remember just a couple of years ago, I forgot what the pairing was of ball pythons, but like popping out hypos from a clutch from a pair of animals I did not know was het hypo. And then the following year tested them by breeding them two visual hypos and was like, oh shit, it's damn, real. Damn. So it's already begun.
See, I just say that with the Borneos, it's going to happen because they're all het for everything.
Yeah, right.
Right?
Exactly.
I know. They become pre-built with all their hets, and then you just got to separate right. them all out.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
It's just funny when people are like, coming from ball pythons, like, hey, I see that you got Borneos. Like, tell me a little bit about their genetics. And I'm like,
oh, I know. You have
take a bowl of soup. And then throw it at the wall.
I know. I need to have some sort of speech prepared when I'm trying to explain it at the shows because you see the eyes sort of go blank pretty quick when you try and, or they just bullshit, you know, trying to sell them on something that's not really there.
Yeah.
But breed two cool snakes together, you're going to get cool snakes. That's
you will get cool snakes, I promise.
That's true. Wait, like, do we reference the Jaguar Amazon tree boas?
I don't want to talk about it.
Oh, gosh.
No, we will not talk about those, Jeremy.
I will every time because it's just not real.
So are there any projects that you are wanting to get into that you don't currently have?
Like I said, there's some just North American rat snake stuff I'd like to expand on a little bit. And then I've always got fantasies of, you know, at this point, there's not much that I have that I want to get rid of, you know, and I would kind of have to get into something big time. One thing that I've sort of always wanted to go and try my hand at would be emerald tree boas. And maybe a few years down the road or something, I might turn my attention a little more towards that. I love all Corallis, and that's just not something I've, you know, had the chance to get into or the money, frankly, for most of my life. So
yeah,
it'd be nice if I could sort of be very intentional about moving into something along those lines. The Madagascar grand boas are another one, but they all would take up a fair bit of room and probably have to move out a lot of the short tails to sort of make that work, if I could even find them these days. I haven't looked lately in the past couple of years, but those have been something that's been on my list. But I mean that's it. And there's always, you know, there would always be more scrubs and stuff, but I'm not looking to really build up a big collection. I sort of, you know, my snake room is about 1/3 of a 2-car garage, and it works great to sort of limit myself, you know, as somebody that works full time and everything, and that's perfect. It can fit my animals plus my babies and not much else in there. So you know, I gotta kind of really think about what I'm going to do and not overwhelm myself. So but there's always stuff out there. I might come across something tomorrow that blows my skirt up and never thought about before.
Well, honestly, I was just going to say that thinking about doing the emerald tree boas in a few years is probably a great idea, because there's like 2 or 3 people right now who have gone all in on making emerald tree boas. So I see that in the next 5 to 10 years, there's probably going to be a slew of emerald tree boas available.
Yeah, that'd be something fun, something to keep an eye on for sure. Look for an opportunity down the road.
Yeah. They're cool. They're I feel like a lot of people just have always had emerald tree boas as like a one day species, you know, something that they always wanted. Like for me, the basins have always just been in the back of my mind is like, man, I would love to have one of those on display. They're just so big and bulky, and the green with the white stripe and everything. They're incredible. And I think that the draw for them, as opposed to like green tree pythons, is like, I feel like for me, they seem a little bit more hardy than green tree pythons do.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because, you know, to anybody unfamiliar or even somewhat familiar, but somewhat new to the hobby, you know, they sort of think of green trees and emeralds as sort of these, you know, basically the same thing, just one's a boa and one's a python. But when you really take a look at them, I mean, even what their size should be and everything like that, they're very different snakes. They, you know, they just both happen to be green and sit on a branch. But I definitely the size potential of, you know, the Corallis, I like bulky snakes. I'm not gonna lie. So I've, you know, green trees are, you know, I know a lot of people obviously keep them a lot bigger than they need to, or get them a lot bigger than they need to. They should be pretty small and slender snakes. So something that's a little chunkier and, you know, like you said, puts on a good display would be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you ever done any lizards or no?
Just crested geckos. I did that for a couple of years, just kind of, you know, they were available at a local show. I'm like, oh, that'd be fun. They're pretty cute. And I did that in, now I sort of wish I'd kept them as so I could produce some feeders from the baby. I produce quite a bit, so I don't know. I might get those again someday, just because they're so low maintenance and, you know, they're fun.
Very prolific.
Nephews over, they get a little bored with the snakes eventually, so it's nice to have a lizard that'll jump around. They can
Yep.
They're so cute though.
They are. And there's a lot of related species, of course, I could see myself getting into. But the bottom line is I'm somewhat of a lazy keeper. I like snakes because they, you know, you can walk away for a week and not have to worry about it. If you got everything set up, it's less true, you know, for most other animals. So even something as simple as a crested gecko, you got to think a little bit more about that and make sure, you know, taken care of. So.
Yeah, somebody's going to come by and drop some crickets in there at least, or something, you know.
Yeah. At least I got a sister that's local. If I ever get anything like that, she'll take care of all that stuff for me.
That's good.
That's good. Having somebody you can rely on is huge.
Yeah, she's 10 years younger, so she grew up with me having everything, you know, just at home. So, you know, I got pictures of her with a Borneo when she's like 6 years old out in the yard, you know, probably circa 2000 or something like that. And she actually,
I wish I was that cool.
We were on vacation last year, and when my Maclots were hatching, which was the first time I'd produced those, so that was exciting. But she was able to come over and get the babies taken out and get all that taken care of. So glad she's around that she can do that.
That's so cool.
Heck yeah, man.
See, my sister has been around the reptiles our whole life too, because I mean I've had stuff forever, but like before I was 13, we only had lizards and tarantulas and stuff. But I remember one time one of my Borneos got out of the rack that I had them in, and it was like a probably 3.5 foot female Borneo, and ended up in her closet. And she called me and she's like, "Hey, I think one of your snakes is in the closet right now." And I was like, "Come on, they're all in racks. There's no way." And she's like, "Oh no." She sent me a picture. She's like, "Oh no, it's definitely in there. You got to get home and come grab it." I'm like, "Okay, it's fine. Just leave it alone."
Oh gosh.
She's not afraid of that stuff though. So. But she lives in Kentucky now, so.
Yeah. No, I lucked out. Most of my family, my immediate family anyway, were pretty cool with it. You know, even my younger brother, he was never as interested. Was always sort of keep his distance. But if he had friends over, he was always down in my room showing off my snake collections. So.
Yeah,
of course, of course.
That's how it goes.
Don't bite on That's my cool. Oh man.
I'm trying to think, like back in the day, I had some, like me and a few of my friends were like getting crested geckos and stuff. And we would just like cherry pick little things here and there, chocolate harlequins, this. And I'm like, man, if we had held on to some of that stuff, I bet you we would produce some really cool stuff by now. It's like, but that's the nature of the beast. Some people, you know, you get stuff, you move them on, and then you regret moving them on, then you get them again, and then.
The revolving door.
Yeah,
that's how it goes.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the revolving door, and it's always the one that got away. The one animal that you're like, I should have never sold it.
I know. There's definitely been some Borneos I've seen pictures of over the years that I've sold to folks that sort of disappeared into the ether eventually, but it's like, that never should have left here.
Yeah,
kind of like kind of like the redhead stuff I was talking about. A couple of those, and just some crazy tiger patterns things. That again, I'm not great at the long term planning. You know, I'm just happy to produce healthy babies that somebody else wants. That's kind of my ultimate goal.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that I sold one to I think it was Jordan Stillwell, and I had two of these babies that look pretty much identical, and they're like super reduced, lots of black spots on them, and I was like, I don't really want to sell these. And I had one that was like eating really good, and then one that was like kind of eating okay, but like it would miss meals here and there. And he was like, I really want that one. And I was like, I don't really have a whole lot of money right now, I guess. Like, and I sold it to him. And he sent pictures since then. And I'm like, man, I shouldn't have sold that. And then the other one starved itself to death and died. And I'm like, man, I can't believe I let that thing go. Oh, regret.
Yeah.
But he's going to make cool stuff with it. So.
Yep.
It happens.
Yeah, I felt that way. I remember that one crazy zebra carpet that I sent to Steve Katz. I remember doing that and being like, looking at it as I was putting it away in that bag and being like, you know, you're probably going to be the nicest one. And sure as shit, then like 2 months later, there's pictures. And I'm like, God damn it.
Dude, that's why I have such a tough time picking which scrubs are gonna go. I'm like, they look like they are average scrubs right now, and then I know I'm gonna sell them and I'd be like, oh man, that thing is bright gold, what was I doing, what was I thinking?
Well, I know the scrubs are tough because there's a lot more subtlety to them until you really see them at a couple years of age, and then you can really see what they're gonna end up like. You know, it's not, at least the Borneos, the pattern's apparent, if nothing else, you know.
Yes. Yeah. I think the Borneos are easier to tell than a lot of the than the red bloods and the Sumatran short tails, because the Borneos, most everything's there, it's just turned down a little bit, and you're like, okay, I can see that this is going to develop in this kind of way as it gets older. But with the Red Bloods, it's like, oh man, you all look brown right now. It's like, after staring at hundreds of them, I got a couple little things where I'm like, okay, I think that this is a little telltale that this one's going to be red, but like,
yeah,
it's tough. Those man, ones that shock tough. You that come out of left field. Yeah.
Basically what it boils down to.
Yep, absolutely. That's exactly how I felt with the jungle carpets. It's like there's a couple little things I can go, okay, you're gonna look pretty nice, but then there's always that one that you're just like, well, shit. I didn't have any idea that was gonna happen.
Yes. Unfortunately. Oh, man.
Yep.
We and live we and we learn, stalk. You know.
Right, as right. We all sulk in our own poor decisions.
My thought behind a bunch of that stuff is like, I still have the adults to make that, so I can make it again if I need to.
Right.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. I've always sort of, you know, I have the parents, and I'm happy with the parents, and those are the animals I'm connected to. So, yeah, if I really want to, I can hold something down the road. And, you know, sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't.
True. True. Very true.
Oh man.
That's why it's important to have holdbacks, Jeremy.
It's hey, look, you're also talking to somebody that holds back a lot of animals. I have basically one entire 45 slot baby rack that is nothing but holdbacks. But that's also a problem with having so many different species.
Yes.
It's only three of these and two of those and two of these and three of those. And then the other one is just all Amazon tree boas, so it's like five of those and 10 of those. Oh man.
Oh, it must be 9 o'clock.
It is. Your lights have gone out. Your backlit is gone.
Yep. I literally just got these surge protector timers recently. And I've been messing with them for the last couple of days because whatever setting I had them on was just not right. And so I finally got it right. So now that they turn off at 9 p.m.
Hey,
that's nice. I finally got myself some smart switches so I can do it for my phone. And that's so much easier to change the time over there.
Absolutely. Yeah,
for real. These ones have like an internal battery, so if like the power goes out for some reason, they still keep time
at least,
so you don't have to reset them. Because I was using the analog ones, these freaking things, and let me tell you,
no,
yeah,
the only thing I use that for anymore is our Christmas tree.
That's finally fair.
All those out, yeah.
Yeah. Oh gosh. Yeah.
But I just got rid of all those now, so now I'm running on high tech stuff, and hopefully, so far so good. I like them so far.
That's good. Welcome to the.
I wish I could show this. Yeah, I wish I could show that stuff to me 15 years ago to be like, hey, right. Look at this thing you're gonna have.
I know this is going to change your life right here. And you don't even know it.
Right.
You don't even know it. You know how you go around and plug in every light every morning before you go to school right. And do shit. Guess what? That's a thing of the past.
Yeah. Right. Where you're going to pull a stack away from the wall to, you know, just to fix up this. It's miserable.
Too real. Too real. When and they're not on casters, so you're just sitting there pulling
on carpet
on the exactly on the carpet with little furniture mover discs from QVC.
I didn't even have those, bro.
Exactly.
Oh god. Oh man, that's what when people see you move something, they're like, wow, I didn't think you were strong enough to move all that. And be like, you know how many times I had to move stacks of floor to ceiling cages to turn on fucking lights? I got hidden muscles, man. Right.
Basically.
Oh gosh. Too freaking real.
Dude. Hell yeah. Well, man, we're winding down our hour here, but we do have one question that we ask every guest that comes on our show. And that main question is, what in the realm of reptiles, whether it be something that you're working with in your own collection or something that you've seen going on online and under the greater umbrella of reptiles, what is something that has you excited about reptiles right now?
No, I should have been prepared for this question. I have plenty of time. No, and I guess my answer would be, and I don't know if this is maybe a result of sort of where I spend my time, you know, sort of in the hobby these days, but it seems like across the board, there is a lot more appreciation for the animal as it is, less so on the morph side, and like just people that just want the animal because it is this how nature created it, and also want to put it on display and, you know, have a way to appreciate it and not, you know, not all things being stuck in a drawer sort of thing. So the people that are really like smaller collections, but more robust in terms of display and not focused on the churning out of, you know, you can say ball pythons, but you know, there's plenty of people doing lots of different things out there. Just sort of the focus and appreciation for the animals as it is. And again, I don't know if that's because sort of that's where my path has sort of led me over the past several years, or, but I feel like it's sort of, it's out in the air in the hobby that a lot of longtime people are sort of changing that direction. So that makes me happy. And I think everyone, if they, you know, could even consider, you know, 10% of their collection towards that direction, would be in good shape.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, I really love that. And being able to have my stuff on display now, like getting some of these scrubs out where I can see them every single day, has been so much more rewarding than having all the number of things that I've got in tubs. You know, and I found that recently I'm starting to feel that shift more and more and more, where I'm like, I really would like to be able to just look in and enjoy these animals inside their enclosures and really get to enjoy them. Because, you know, aside from cleaning and whatever, having snakes and racks, it's like that's most of the time when you see them is when you're doing cleaning or checking on them or, you know, doing waters or whatever. And so being able to just look in and see them and appreciate them, it's like that's why we got into it in the first place. It's the reason why we got all these snakes, you know. So
now, don't get me wrong, I'll always keep my bloods and short tails in racks.
They do better.
That's what suits them.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that. And I'm also, you know, believe me, I'm not a big proponent of some of the folks that are in some of the, you know, naturalistic vivarium groups and some of the, all those things. I think there's some extremes in there that are not willing to sort of listen to reason in a lot of ways. But again, just in general, something that's going to help you appreciate your animals a little bit more and not focus on, you know, the money to be made from them, if that's even a thing for you. So
true. I can't tell you how many I stopped arguing with people on the blood and short tail thing because they're like, I'm gonna put it in a fully bioactive thing, and I'm like, listen, it's going to pee three times and it's going to kill all your plants and all your isopods. It's not applicable. It's not viable. Okay, just not. You can do it with other things, just not bloods and short tails. And
they're not going to listen. They just got to experience it for themselves.
Yeah. And the thing's going to be stressed. It's going to lose its mind, and they just do better in tubs. Okay, just put it back in a tub. They are happier, and that's what's most important.
That's what's important. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on tonight, man. And if people want to see the stuff that you're doing or reach out to you, where should they do that?
Yeah, Instagram's probably the best. Python Elmer on there, and you can sort of keep up to date with what I'm doing. Also, Python Elmer on Morph Market if you're looking for anything I might have available.
Hell yeah, sweet, man. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate the time. We had a good time tonight, and hopefully I'm looking forward to seeing what you hatch out this year.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
Yes, sir.
Take care, man.
Catch ya.
See ya.